Hey, welcome. This is episode 404 of the 343 podcast. Today's going to be a controversial one for all you folks out there. Actually, not for all of you, but for those of you who love to virtue signal, which is basically all of the mainstream American soccer folks out there, that demographic, man, they love to virtue signal. So what am I getting at? I'm getting at today's discussion is about the dark arts in football. Yes, the dark arts. You may or may not have heard of it, but you certainly have heard of things like, oh, diving is cheating, or simulation, or mass confrontation, or have you ever heard things like that player lacks class, or Luis Suarez should be like this type of person versus the type of person that he is? All of you, if you've said that sort of stuff, you're not going to like this episode too much, but I'll tell you this much. It's very valuable. And the reason it's very valuable is because you're going to get an insight from practitioners in the way that we actually think. They're not going to tell you the truth, but they all think the same things and do the same things that I'm going to divulge in this episode. Let me finish off this little introduction with reading off what Pochettino mentioned a couple of days ago. Quote, you find some coaches that say, oh, you know, you need to know the culture of the American player. And I say, no, I know the most important thing, the culture of football and soccer. We need to translate the culture of football to the American player. I think after 1 year, we're making great progress. So guys, you're hearing it from the U.S. men's national team manager in Argentine, you know, that World Cup champion country, the World Cup champion culture, the home to two of the GOATs, Diego Armando Maradona and Lionel Messi. Let's learn a little bit. And coaches, while technically there is no dark arts lesson or modules in the 343 coaching development platform, there's everything else that you need. There's a holistic methodology that takes you from A to Z. Yes, from A to Z, whether you be at the lowest levels of youth soccer here in the States, at the rec level, the mid-tier level, or the super elite top of the food chain level. That is what you get at 343coaching.com. All the core foundational framework activities are there for you from day one. So if you hop on right now, you can start in your training session this afternoon or tomorrow or whenever your next training session happens to be. You're going to be on the right path. Do yourself a favor. Head on over again to 343coaching.com. Sign up right away. And parents, you are the coaches off of the field. So you need to be well versed in things of soccer as well if you want your kids to actually fulfill their quote unquote potential. For you, you go to 343masterclass.com. Learn to develop a discerning eye, a better discerning eye for what the heck is happening here in the American soccer landscape. What should your player be doing at home? What sort of individual activities could they be doing? How should they be kicking a ball against the wall? What other things should they be doing in order to develop things that you're not going to get in your club environment, things that you don't get in the team training environment? And look, I know it's complicated. You're always looking around, what is best for my son? What is best for my daughter? Should I go with this coach? Should I go with that coach? Should I go with this team, with that team, with this club, with that club? And ultimately, especially if your kid is very, very young, a lot of the decision rides on your shoulders. So please head on over to 343masterclass.com. And over the course of time, you're going to develop your discerning eye for what is a better way of guiding your kid. Last but certainly not least, for those coaching the little ones in the 7-versus-7 format, you go to 7v7coaching.com. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoy this episode. Here we go.
Let's talk about something that Americans are scared of, the dark arts of soccer, Gary, something that a lot of Americans aren't even aware of until they see it used against them, something that they're always complaining about, bitching about, or calling other teams cheaters, right? I really want to get into this topic, Gary. One, to understand the culture behind it, because I know that you say that this is a cultural thing, okay? And two, I want to know, can coaches teach us and should they teach us, right? I think a lot of people might say, oh, Gary, Benny, you want to teach your kids to be a cheater, but I don't necessarily see it as cheating, even though I know a lot of people do, so. Maybe to start, Gary, give us a good definition of what you mean by the dark arts of soccer.
Well, you kind of hinted at it. It's the game within the game, first and foremost. So there's the game of soccer, and then there's a game that's happening within the game of soccer, outside of the tactics, the system of play, 4-4-2, 4-2-3-1, outside of the technical things that the players have or don't have. Outside of the physical tools, that players have or don't have outside of the, like, actually not so much the mental and psychology, the fourth component, because a lot of the dark arts go into that component there, is the mentality, the psychology. But usually what people think about when we say mentality and psychology, you think about having discipline, being committed, you know, to the sport, to be the best that you can be, eating right, sleeping right, paying attention to your coach, doing your homework outside of the team training environment. That's usually what people think about when it comes to mentality psychology, but the dark arts kind of slip in there, and they also require technique and tactics, and sometimes even physical tools to do the dark arts. So it's the game within the game. For example, things like diving, which we can dive into, of course, that's the obvious one. Things like pulling the shirt of the attacker or the defender, that's also the obvious one, but it could be little nudges here or there that could be considered illegal as well. And you want to try to do this with these sorts of things in a subtle manner that the ref either doesn't see, or it's not so obvious that the ref decides to call it, or not so crazy that the ref decides to call it, but you get an advantage by doing it. Okay. And you gain an advantage by diving, or you gain an advantage by, again, a 50-50 ball. The ball goes out of bounds. You know, it's not your ball. It's the other team's ball, but you don't care. You go and get the ball and you throw the ball in, or you go and get the ball and you put it on the corner flag because it's, you want to kind of, you know, influence the ref, you know, because if there's any doubt in the ref's mind or the linesman's mind, and you go ahead and take the initiative and make the call for them, the chances that they're going to override your call are slim to none. Because I've been a ref too, here and there, you know, way back in the day, just because, you know, nothing formal and nothing for paid. But sometimes you don't know whose ball it is when it goes out of bounds. And you kind of look to the players without looking to them to see who decides to take the initiative. And you're like, oh, okay, the red team just grabbed it. And the blue team's not really complaining all that much. So I guess it's red ball. So that's also a dark art, right? Take that advantage when it's granted to you. More dark arts, influencing the ref lines. Talk to the ref, start conditioning them. If they call a foul against you or something like that, start talking like, bro, they've been doing this all game long. 10 like of these fouls and you've called none of them. Or bro, you just gave us a yellow card for this, when they've done it 3 or 5 times. The next one next time that they do it, you better be giving them at least a yellow card. You badgering them, you know, sometimes you do it in a respectful way. Sometimes you don't do it in such a respectful way. Sometimes it's a one-on-one sort of thing. Sometimes it's what they call mass, you know, what would they call it again, Benny? When it's like a mass, when it's like 4 or 5 of you guys huddling, you know, surrounding the ref, you know, to talk to them or to badger them. Mass confrontation. I don't know what they labeled it. I think they invented it here in MLS. Oh, we got to get rid of this mass confrontation thing. It is a disgrace to the sport, blah, 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 blah. So all of these things are the dark arts. And there's even dark arts sometimes from the manager's perspective too. And there's dark arts with the ball boys on the side of the field. You know, the ball boy will get it for you, but they won't get it for them. And vice versa, if you're winning the game, they don't give you the ball right away because you're winning. Like, nah, let the ball go 100 miles down the road and don't even fetch it. And they have the other team go fetch it. All dark arts, Ben.
Yeah, so before we get into the player aspect of it, Gary, because I feel like there's probably more examples that players can use, or they can probably influence the ref a little bit more or actually participate in the dark arts. But from the manager side, Gary, there's a lot of things that can happen. And for me, I told you in the last episode that my team, we won the game, right? But we were winning 3-2, Gary. And by the way, every game, bro, like anytime there's like any type of contact from the other team, like I'm yelling at the ref every foul. Hey, you know? And it's funny because like the first play of the game until the end, Gary, I'll keep doing it. But then you hear the other parents start saying like shut up, coach, or like, you know, mimic me by saying like, hey, you know? Like, mm-hmm. And I'm like, just fucking sit down and watch a game. But it's so funny how the parents get so rattled like that. But even at the end of the game, Gary, it was 3-2. You know, I told my players at halftime, like, look, we're winning. Like, we haven't won in a while. Let's do anything that we can to win the game. The ball goes out of bounds. Let's take our time. You go down for a foul. Take your time getting up. And, bro, like, the last 5 minutes of the game, I was making subs like crazy, bro. Like, anytime I went out, substitution. Anytime I went out, substitution in. The last minute of the game, Gary, I'm like, hey, rep, sub. And he's like, no more subs, coach. I know what you're doing. And I'm like, mm-hmm. What the fuck? This says in the league rules, unlimited substitutions. You know, how are you going to deny me this chance? But it's just little things like that from the manager side that I think it's missing a lot. And bro, especially in youth soccer here in the States, kind of sounds like a dick saying this, but you can influence the refs so easily, bro. I mean, a lot of them are young refs. And for example, like if I yell at them after the first foul, guarantee you on the next one, even if it's like a soft 50-50 ball, they will call a foul, you know? So influence the ref as much as you can, bro. And I know a lot of people are going to take issue with this, and it's youth soccer, Benny. Like, you shouldn't be doing this, but fuck off, dude. I want to win, dude. I want my teams to win. And we've talked about the importance of winning. So why not do anything that you can to sway the result in your team's favor, Gary? You know?
Yeah.
But okay. So from the manager perspective, Gary, what are some ways that you've seen that how the manager can influence the game when it comes to the dark arts?
Bro, you just listed all of them.
I know there's more, dude. I know there's more.
Like, quote unquote, like fraudulent substitutions. Fraudulent because in theory, you're supposed to be making substitution to make adjustments because you see something wrong or you're losing. So you need another attacking player to try to catch up. But these are straight up fraudulent substitution. It has nothing to do with correcting issues. It's a time wasting endeavor, which is, people say, oh, that's so unsportsmanlike, guys. So it's, God, no, this is actually the sport. This is actually part of the sport, is to do this stuff. It's gamesmanship is what it is. That's what they should be calling it. And for folks who are joining into this particular episode without listening to the last one, because you said that you want to win, Benny, and all that stuff, let's be very clear. You, Benny, like all youth coaches in particular here in the United States, are forced to win. You have to win because your job is on the line here in the United States of America youth soccer landscape. You have to win. So, of course, we're going to resort to these sorts of things. The substitutions, the yelling at the refs, hey, or exaggerating it, because you kind of want to yell in such a way that it sounds like you have a whole crowd behind you, which is what happens in the professional game too. In the professional game, when there might be a handball in the box or a foul in the box, the whole stadium erupts and says, right? Yeah, of course that influences the referees. And sure, they have VAR to look things over and things of that nature, but they don't use VAR for all of the fouls on the field. So this does influence things. It's very important, Benny. Other things that a manager can do is not even during the game, pre-game, before the game starts, you go and you can either schmooze with the refs. You have to judge, size things up. Maybe you're already friends with the ref, friends in the sense that they know who you are. They've been reffing you for years, or you know what I mean? And you kind of butter them up before the game, or you go and tell them, hey, look, number 10 is a dirty son of a bitch. Like, just take care of my players, whatever it is. And then every time the number 10 even does a ticky-tack foul, you start getting in the ref's ear. Hey, see, I've been telling you, number 10. Next thing you know, number 10 gets yellow cards very easily versus if you had never said anything in the pregame. I mean, I have to get back on the field, Benny, to kind of remind myself of all these things. But you delineated so many of them. And you train... On the matter of training your players to do it, yes, you can do that. The players do learn these sorts of things. Not only do they see it all the time on TV nowadays because it's so accessible, but this isn't some difficult tactical thing to pull off. It's pretty straightforward and common sense. However, the challenge is in the players' emotions are running high during a match. And so they forget stuff. They just forget to do it. You know what I mean? Like, if they get fouled and it's at the end of the game, they forget that, hey, we're winning. Stay on the fucking ground. You're not hurt. Stay on the ground a minute and a half. Have your coach and the personal trainer come out on the field. Eat up the clock, even though nothing has happened to you. But they forget then they fall, and they get right back up, and you want to kill yourself. Like, Johnny, what are you doing?
Fucking Johnny, bro.
No, Johnny gets picked on a lot, dude. But can you? Yes. Should you? Absolutely. This is the real world. This is the real world, ladies and gentlemen. Teach the players, teach the children, educate them on how the real world works.
Yeah, bro, that was me this weekend. One of my kids got hurt, and it's like all the way on the other side of the field, right, by the parents. And the ref, you know, calls me on, and I'm like walking over, bro, as slow as I can. And you hear the other parents say, like, "You're time wasting." I'm like, "Hey, this is my kid. He's hurt. You don't care about kids, you know?"
Yeah.
In any little thing, bro.
The kids also forget when you're doing the substitution to kill time. Sub, Johnny, come off. And he starts running off the field. Why are you running off the field? I taught you. I told you, walk off the field. Limp. And if you're on, and by the way, if you know that you're going to, here's another dark art for the managers. You kind of tell Johnny, "Hey, I'm going to sub you in the next one. Get your ass on the other corner of the field. So when I sub you, you have to walk that much further to get off the field, right? Don't stay right here next to the sideline to get substituted."
Yeah. No, Gary, in youth soccer, you can get away with this so much more because one, there's unlimited substitutions, you know? And two, like, most likely the ref is not going to give a kid a card for walking off the field. I mean, you see it at the highest levels of the program, though. They don't want to have like three to five subs per game. So then, like, they really take advantage at the end of the one guy coming off is slow as fuck, dude, walking. He doesn't care if he gets a yellow card, you know?
Yeah.
But what I was going to say, Gary, another coaching example, one of my biggest regrets from the final that was in this last season, I think at this point we're winning, bro. And the ball got like kicked out of bounds, like towards me. And it was going to be the other team's throw, right? And like, I think I like jumped to like catch it instead of fucking just letting it go. Like, if I let it go, it would have bounced over the fence, fucking wasted 45 to a minute. But I, for some reason, I jumped and caught it, bro. I'm like, fuck me. And then sure enough, 2 minutes later, bro, they score a goal. So I always think about that. I'm like, dude, if I would have just let that one ball roll away, think about it, that, bro. It can change the entire game. Maybe one extra player tracks back in that time versus I grab the ball and fucking give it to him. Like, I've thought about that so many times, dude. I'm like, I'm a fucking idiot.
No, you go into a different branch of the universe. So it's like it's the butterfly effect. If the wings of a butterfly flap right here, it ends up causing maybe a hurricane, you know, in Southeast Asia or something like that. It's these little tiny things alter the entire future timeline of reality.
Yeah. Fuck, dude. I still think about that moment. What is your response, Gary, to people that say, and I know people are going to comment this too, but fuck them, you know? Why are you teaching a kid to cheat? Or people that call the dark arts of soccer cheating?
It's not cheating. It's not. Why is it cheating? How? Show me in the rule book where this says you are cheating. If you do too many substitutions, you are cheating. If you take a corner kick right there with you and your buddy right next to the corner flag, and then shield the ball and try to waste time and then kick it off of the opponent so that you get another corner and you do it again. And then you do it again. And then you do it again. Where, how is that cheating? Where in the world does it say that that's cheating? Or if you feel, the opponent kind of touch you on the back and just barely touch you, but it's a little touch and you fall, where does it say that's cheating? Oh, Gary, you're you're lying. You actually don't want to fall. You don't have to fall. And then when you fall, you act like you got shot and you stay on the ground for two hours. You can call it what you want. It's not cheating, though. You can call it that you're a liar, that you're unsportsmanlike. You can say all these other things, but don't say it's cheating.
No, Gary, I honestly hate the dark arts. When it's another team doing it to me.
Of course.
You know what I mean? Like, it's the worst feeling in the world when you're losing 2-1 and the guy goes down and he's taking longer. And then at that point, you're yelling at the ref, like, "Ref, what the fuck? This was wasting time." But you know in the back of your head that you'd be doing the same exact thing if it was your team. Yeah.
And by the way, Ben, They'll say, oh, but it's not in the spirit of the game, or they want to keep the game, quote unquote, like pure or something like this. No, I think you are actually tainting the game and the spirit of the game by trying to have everything so clean. When they introduced VAR, Benny, I was anti-VAR the whole way from the very inception. And a lot of people are now coming around to being anti-VAR as well, because you've stolen something from the game. For example, the biggest thing is when you score a goal nowadays, you can't really even celebrate it like you used to celebrate it anymore, because you don't know if VAR is going to say, oh, you were offsides by a fingertip, or the ball didn't go over the line by, you know, a hair, literally like 1 millimeter. The ball was still kind of on the line by 1 millimeter or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, no, there was a partial handball, you know, two passes ago, you know, and it has to be taken back. You can't celebrate a fucking goal anymore. The orgasm that was scoring a goal is not the same, because it's kind of like they score and then everybody, the fans included, you're like, okay, let's see. You killed something. You killed the spirit. And you kill the spirit of like a Neymar, you know, falling and tumbling like he got shot. By the way, that's all part of influencing the ref too. It's like, hey, protect me, referee, protect the skillful players. Because a skillful player that's dribbling or trying to dribble or trying to be creative, people don't understand who've never played. If you're running a million miles an hour or you're trying to do a body feint or something, actually, any ticky-tack contact with the opponent unbalances you. It unbalances you. And so the defenders also have a dark art that they perform. They know that it unbalances the very skillful, creative players. So guess what? They do some little ticky-tacky things on purpose to unbalance you, which is technically is a foul, but it's not hard enough to really call the foul because it's a little ticky-tacky thing. And so refs won't call it. And so what's a creative attacking player supposed to do? Just take it and then lose the ball or lose control of the ball or do a turnover because you didn't fall? No. Neymars or the Ronaldinhos, they should be like, no, if you touch me, I know that unbalances me and it's actually a foul, but the refs are not going to call it. Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to go down to force the decision and have the referee call the foul. So it's the dark arts of the defender, and now the offensive player is trying to counter the dark art with a dark art of their own to bring justice to the situation.
Yeah, bro. The game within the game within the game, bro. It's crazy. It seems to me, Gary, the media in the U.S. also has a big part in making the dark arts into something that is not. Like, for example, you bring up Neymar a lot. I've heard from so many like commentators and sports figures, just so much shit talking on Neymar because like, oh, anytime he gets touched, he's going to flop. Or you see like LeBron, when he gets like barely touched and the announcers are like, oh, like this guy's taking acting classes from Neymar, right? And it's just grown into this thing where all of the media will say like, oh, look at these soft soccer players. Like, you know, soccer is a fucking pussy ass sport. These fools like fall anytime that they get touched, and it just has turned into something that is so bad. But I think they're missing the most critical part of it is that it's a gamesmanship thing, and they're actually doing it for their team's advantage, not because they're a bitch and they're going to fall at any contact, right? So the media is like spinning it and turning it into something bad. Yeah. Have you noticed that, Gary?
Since I was a child, this has been the theme here in American soccer and about American soccer. Soccer is a game for pussies for this sort of reason. And unfortunately, what has perpetuated this is MLS has perpetuated this notion that soccer is for pussies. How so? Well, first off, they have always been on that side of keeping everything pristine and not having gamesmanship and not having these sorts of things. Because a lot of the culture here that is part of the MLS fan base stems from England. And England has always been rule-following bitches. So they are also, they need to be proper and everything needs to be classy. And so everybody needs to follow the rules. And so when the English people would see like a Neymar, because we're talking about Neymar doing this sort of stuff, they hate it. They hate it. And the American mainstream MLS takes its cues from England. They are the children of England, the progeny of England. So they've inherited the same thing. And the reporters and journalists here, I mean, this is a long story. I'll keep it short. But the reporters and journalists here, they're incredibly ignorant about soccer, Benny. Absolutely ignorant. They know nothing. And as a consequence of that, they take their cues from MLS. They take their cues from being rule-following bitches in their lives. This is why they've never accomplished anything of remark. If you're an MLS, I'm sorry. If you're an MLS reporter and that is what you do, or if you're trying to be one of those guys, you've actually accomplished nothing in life. You've taken no risks, really. You're a bitch. And so you come to this environment where it's full of bitches and then you fit in, okay? And so you want to follow the rules and you want everybody else to follow the rules, because guess what? To become a somebody, do something worthy of remark, Benny, in any domain, you can't be a strict by the book person. If you're a strict by the book person, guess what? That means you're stuck in the box that somebody else built for you and you never create anything at all. By definition, you're mediocre because you decide to stay in the box where the rules bound you. So they have perpetuated this in the American soccer media of diving is bad, embellishment is bad, you know, badgering the ref is bad, VAR is good because everybody should follow the rules. We should always look at the cameras to see what's true and what's not. Oh, see, it was offside. Offside, literally the guy's pinky. You see the freaking little image, you know, and who knows how accurate that is. They can shift the image around, you know, or something. Look, the guy's pinky is ahead, offside, and they nullify a goal. They killed the sport, Ben. They killed it. Can I say one more thing, dude? Because I know the counter to, we've been talking about Neymar. I know the counter a lot of people may have already had in their head. So let's address it. Well, Gary, Messi doesn't dive. Yeah. Do you want to know why Messi doesn't dive and embellish and fall and try to get the ref to call the foul? Because it's to his disadvantage. He is so good that it is better for him to be unbalanced than him going down and getting a foul called. Because him unbalanced is still better than the best players in the world being stable. He's unbalanced, Benny, and he falls to the ground, and he still retains possession, and he still dribbles by everybody while he's on the ground. That's why he's like, no, I'm getting back up with the ball because I'm still beating you. I'm still going to win. If it's anybody else, they lose the ball. So they have to go down and get the call. Did that make sense at all? Is that cogent?
Yeah, it did. And I was just thinking, Gary, I'm going to interject while you're speaking on that, a clip of Messi doing that, because I don't think, like, listening to it, I don't think people truly understand what it is that he does and why he's so special. Like when you see him getting chopped like four or five times in a row and he still stays on his feet and in balance and still takes on the next three guys and goes to score a goal. I mean, it's out of this world, Gary. It's like almost unimaginable what this guy does. But you're right, dude. It's to his advantage. Like he doesn't need to dive, bro. Like what's
the point? It's worse. But it's worse if he goes down and gets a foul call.
Yeah. But don't get me wrong, Gary, and I think you'll agree with this. If it's late in the game and his team is winning, he's going to fucking go down for a foul. And not only that, something that a lot of people don't realize or see, I learned this from like Choco and Prieto, bro. Like these fools get chopped for a foul, but then they go and they catch the ball with their arms, bro. So the ref is almost like, oh shit, like it must have been a foul, you know? I've never seen a guy go down and get chopped and catch the ball and then the ref says like, oh, handball, you know?
Correct. Another dark art, dude, I
saw that from a young age and like, fuck, dude, that's badass, bro. I'm going to start doing that.
You know, what's also interesting is Messi now in his older age, he has little by little done more of that, of going down when he gets chopped here in MLS or with the national team or something, he's kind of lost a little bit of that edge where if he's unbalanced or if they're hacking him, for him to still continue and dribble by people and go and score a goal. So now I can see it. Maybe other people can't see it. A lot of people can't see it. I can see it. It's like he's deciding to go down at times and get the foul call instead of staying up and continuing with the play.
Yeah. So, Gary, I know you say a lot this is a cultural thing. What is it about these South American countries? Because I think you see it the most prominent with the Argentinas, Mexico's, Ecuador, all these teams. They have that gamesmanship. They have a little bit more competitive desire to win. So where do you think that all stems from? Is that just the way that they were raised to, like you, Gary, you're Argentinian. As a kid, were you always super ultra competitive and would do anything you could to win?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. Argentinians have something in the DNA, dude, where losing is, it's just the worst thing that can happen to you. You, it's just unacceptable. You cannot lose. And that's not to say that we don't accept failures. Of course we accept failures. And that's not to say that we don't understand that you need to have failures in order to learn and to get better. We understand that too. But if we fail, it's got to be only if we gave everything we had, right? And still fail. We did everything humanly possible, right? And still fail. Okay, we have to accept it and let's see what happens. But we can't accept not doing everything humanly possible to win. Short of breaking the law or something like that. But I know in Argentina, they're always looking at angles. How do you circumvent the law? How do you break the law? But fundamentally, where does it come from, Benny? When you said South America, and it doesn't have to be Argentina. It's Brazil, Ecuador, Chile, Colombia, Venezuela, you name it. It's because it comes from a deep-seated need to survive. It's a survival instinct that's ingrained in the culture because they're in the global South over there. Not everybody has the luxury of being in the United States, where we are the global superpower, where we have, you know, the dollar is the global currency, and we live relative luxurious lives compared to everybody else. Nobody has this privilege. So what do you have to do to survive and make ends meet and have food on the table and have a roof over your head and try to get ahead in the world such that you're not constantly choking every day? You have to look for angles, Ben, to survive. So with that ingrained, since being a child, you're looking for angles in soccer too. And guess where they play most of their soccer growing up? In the streets. Now it's not as happening as much as historically because society has progressed and moved on and there's the internet and there's social media and people get distracted by video games. And so not as many players are out there in the streets playing on dirt and rolling up, you know, two trash cans to act as goals. But that's what it's always been. It still exists. And in the streets are wild, Ben. There is no referee there. You are the ref. Everybody's the ref. So it's survival of the fittest. And you do whatever it is that you can. You lie, cheat, and steal if you can. So all of that is part of the culture. And it grows into the professional players. You think Messi is a good little angel, dude? Messi's not a nice little angel. He's badgering the ref more than almost anybody. And he uses his GOAT status, his superpower, his captain's armband to leverage the shit out of the ref. You think the ref doesn't really tremble, especially like these MLS refs, but most all refs globally, okay? Unless you're like a GOAT level referee yourself, you think they don't tremble when Messi comes up to them and starts fucking cussing them out? They fucking tremble inside. And so they'll give, they'll be strong, but they'll give in. They'll give little things here or there. Messi's not an angel, Ben.
Right. So do you think, Gary, as a kid over there in those countries, do you think this is taught by the coach or they just pick it up from watching the games on TV, from the street games? And like, as a coach, you don't even have to say anything. You know that if it's 5 minutes left in the game and you're winning, you know your players are going to take it to the corner, right? Or is it a little balanceable?
It's both. If here in the United States, the coach has to do 95% of the heavy lifting to teach these naive little children, you know, what the game's all about, and 5% comes from the children. In Argentina, it might be inverted. You know, it's like the coach has to do 10% of the teaching because 90% the kids already understand and know.
Yeah, that makes sense. I can already see the comments on this one, Gary. I'm actually looking forward to it though. Like, oh dear, you're advocating for lying, cheating, and stealing, like you said in the phrase. But
we have an American audience primarily that grew up in America. They didn't grow up in the global South. They don't have that survival instinct ingrained in them. They actually, and if they're younger, they're supreme, sorry, not sorry, they're supreme pussies. We have a whole generation of weak men that have been generated the past generation or two. Weak, soft men, because survival's easy, has been easy in the United States. You're not going to go hungry. You're always going to have a bed and roof over your head. If this career, this job doesn't work out, I'll get another one. Or I'll go on unemployment for God knows how long until I get another one. If you have a government job, you don't get fired and just don't do shit. You have a 40-hour work week, Ben, and they literally probably put in an honest 5 or 6 hours worth of work, their 40-hour work week. The rest of the time, fucking off. Ever since COVID, work from home. They're not doing shit. They're scratching their balls at home on the internet all day, not doing dick, maybe moving the mouse once in a while in case their employer has some mouse tracking software or something to see if you're working, or move the mouse a little bit to have their team's light be green, you know, so that their other team members see that Benny's light is still green on Teams. So he must be on his computer. I guess he's working. Nobody does shit around here. Soft, soft, soft. And so, of course, those are the comments that we're going to get, Ben. Soft ass bitches, the lot of them. And that's why our soccer players here in this country are soft ass bitches.
Yeah. You know what's fucked up too, Gary, is that you see the dark arts in other sports in this country, but it doesn't get labeled as dark arts, right? For example, like in football, right? They're about to kick a field goal and the coach calls a timeout, right? Some people could say like, oh, that's a dark art. You're fucking icing the kicker, but it doesn't get labeled as that. That gets labeled as, oh, like great coaching, right? Or in baseball, like somebody says something to your teammate and the pitcher fucking decks it at his leg on a pitch. Like, oh, you know, my bad. But over there in baseball, it's like, oh, like this guy is a good teammate. He has his back. But when it happens in soccer, you get labeled as a fucking cheater. I don't know why our country is like that, dude. It's weird.
Bro, what are these episodes? Where do they always end up? They always end up with promotion, relegation, and open ecosystem, an ecosystem based on merit. That's where we always end up. They have a monopoly, and the monopoly has laid out, these are the rules. This is the culture. This is what is accepted in our stadiums and what's not accepted in our stadiums. And the rules are so strict that everybody has to be a pussy, basically, in the stadiums.
Yeah.
And these are codes of conduct for players. Oh, the player, you know, was alleged to have said some sort of racial slur, you know, under his breath or something. Contract suspended. You're out of here. You can't do anything. You can't say anything. The coaches can't do anything. They can't say anything. Mass confrontations against the ref. Mass confrontation as if they're going to kill the ref. They're just there a little close to being in his face, like in other sports. In hockey, in baseball, which you just brought up, you would historically have the freaking manager come up to the ref's, the umpire's face like this, yelling and cussing up a storm. That's a great culture over there, accepted. But yeah, in soccer here, it's been built by, of, and for a very specific demographic. The pussy ass bitch demographic. That's who it's been built for, Benny. So that's why they preserve this sort of culture. In hockey, you can literally get into fights. It's good. All good.
Yeah. I think I've asked you this before, Gary, but maybe you can help me understand it better. But doesn't MLB, NHL, NFL, don't they all have monopolies as well? And so why are those leagues considered the best in the world? But there's no promotion relegation. It's a monopoly, right? They have their own set of standards and practices, kind of like MLS. So what's the difference?
Yeah, well, the biggest difference of them all is they're not international. They're not in an international competition. So the NFL, which is the poster boy for this, the only country in the whole world who really plays American football gridiron is the United States. So de facto, you're going to be the best in the world. Because who else is there compared to? Nobody else plays this game. I can invent a game here in my house and start inviting friends over, and I can declare myself the GOAT at this game because nobody fucking plays it. I'm just the best amongst 10 people here. So that's the NFL thing. NBA. So NBA, okay. More and more countries are playing more and more basketball over the past years and maybe even decades. And look what's happened to the NBA over the course of time. They've been infiltrated like crazy by foreign players, and the foreign players are among the best in the league at this point. Well, where were the foreign players forged? They weren't forged in the United States. They were forged elsewhere. Plus, Benny, plus, let us not forget what we said moments ago, that the United States is the global superpower. They have the world's reserve currency, the dollar, which is what they export and they import everything else. And since we have that status, we are the wealthiest. So we can have the best infrastructure among all the countries. So couple that with the fact that basketball, hockey, all the other sports aren't also the number one sport in their respective countries. Nobody really plays it that seriously. Of course you're going to be considered the best. But are you really the best? It's hard to tell. Argentina beat the United States in the Olympics. I think Spain even did the same. I'd have to do my research. Please don't hold me to it. You had teams like Lithuania, even back in the day when it was Vlade Divac was the Lithuanian star. Lithuania would give the United States hard-ass trouble. Look at these weak little countries. And when it comes to international competition, they give the U.S. a game. It's not as crystal clear who is the best.
Yeah.
And you can't prove it's the best either. How can you prove that the best coaches are in the NFL or the best players are in the NFL? You can't prove it. Because whoever didn't make the NFL, they didn't get drafted or something like that. There's no way to get your ass back in there. There is no second division to earn your way up. So there is no meritocracy. Are they the best in the world? Yes. Nobody plays it. Could it be better? Absolutely, it could be better. That's the other key point. All of these sports, NFL, NBA, basketball, hockey, baseball, it could be way better than it is right now. Way better. Better players, better managers, better competition, better everything. If it was open.
Right. I was going to save this for the end, Gary, but I think it kind of ties in. It was a comment. A lot of people have been commenting this. Our best athletes play other sports. And you kind of commented back saying this is a misguided view. So when you say this is a misguided view, expand on it.
It's so stupid. Well, we touched, there's so many angles to go down. Okay. Every angle could be a whole episode. I'll keep it a little superficial. First and foremost, best athletes. What the fuck do we even mean by best athletes? Okay, let's just roll with the notion that maybe everybody has in their head what a best athlete kind of looks like or is, whatever, okay? When you're a kid, you're not saying, oh, I'm a great athlete, so I'm going to choose to play these other sports and not soccer. No kid does that. And the parents don't do that either, Benny. Oh, my kid's a great athlete. I'm not going to take him to soccer. I'm going to take him to these other sports. We're not doing that, number one. Number two, we already have millions, tens of millions of kids and soccer players in this country. Tens of millions choose to play soccer. You're telling me that in a population of tens of millions, there aren't great athletes, global class athletes? Of course there is. Just even statistically speaking, of course there is. And guess what? If they're global class athletes also and good at soccer, people like doing what they're good at, Ben. They don't go to something else. So if you're great or good at soccer, you love it and you stick with it. You just don't abandon ship for something else. So we have tens of millions of people playing soccer, Benny, that we don't have a pool problem at all. We don't have it. Next, if you look at the best teams in the world, international or club level, and you look at the physiology of those players, you don't see like a Reggie Bush, right? Former USC running back, went to the NFL, did great. You don't see these linebacker type profiles on the best teams in the world. Look at Argentina, current World Cup champion. You don't see wide receivers or point guard type body builds with that sort of athleticism. No, It's a different body type. It's a different type of athleticism. It is soccer athleticism. Oh, well, Gary, if Reggie Bush had picked soccer, who's to say we didn't have Reggie Bushes that picked soccer? I've seen countless players throughout my decades in the game who have been incredible athletes, but they fucking suck at soccer. They suck. They fucking suck. So just because you're a great athlete, there's still the technical piece of the puzzle that you have to get really good at. There's still the tactical piece of the puzzle that has a lot to do with the brain, okay, and being able to understand, have spatial awareness, timing. That's not necessarily a physiological sort of thing. And then you have to have the mental fortitude too, to have the consistency, the discipline. There's all these other elements aside from the one element of the four that is the physical side. I'll keep going, Benny. You know who has the physiology of what all these folks say? Oh, if only our best athletes played soccer. You know what countries usually have that sort of physiology? What they're thinking of? I know what you're thinking of. Nigeria, Ghana, Cameroon, almost the entire African nation has that sort of physiology, body type, athleticism that you're all thinking of. They're not the global superpowers. The global superpowers look rail thin, like a Di Maria or a Neymar or a 5'6" midget. In Argentina, they literally call a Messi enano. His teammates call him enano, which is midget. Okay. That's the GOAT above all the Nigerians, Ghanaians, Cameroonians, the French, right? And the French have incredible athletes, a lot of which are immigrants or imported from the outside. Who's the GOAT? Messi is the GOAT. Oh, but Messi's an incredible athlete. Yeah, but bitch, if you had seen him here in the parks in the United States at age 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, you would look at that and be like, nah, bro, let's go to the high school football game. I'll show you athletes. You know what I mean? Like, they wouldn't say that Messi is the best athlete. No chance. So we can go on and on exploring these threads, Ben. But it's the most ignorant thing in the world to say the United States isn't great at soccer because our best athletes choose another sport. The stupidest, most ignorant thing. And I don't mean to be so vulgar with this, because everybody has to start somewhere. I was a noob at one point too. I didn't know anything. Everybody is on a certain part of the learning curve. These people are just very early on the learning curve. It's sad if they've been in soccer or a fan of it or involved for 10, 15, 20 years and still saying this stuff. That makes me sad. That makes me question your something upstairs. But if you're new, No hard feelings.
Yeah, you can't blame them, Gary. I mean, because look at what is the player profile that the U.S. likes, right? Big, fast, and strong. And so naturally, these people are going to say, like, oh, if only LeBron had played soccer, you know, we'd be winning a World Cup. But they have no idea of the different, like you just mentioned, all these different types of the best players in the world are not even close to the same athleticism of, you know, what these people are thinking of. And don't get me wrong, they're athletic, Gary, just athletic in a different way. Just not that big, fast, strong type player profile. You know what I mean?
And the U.S., to pull on what your thread, the U.S. historically, the U.S. men's national team, the MLS teams, they're not at a physical disadvantage to the other nations. They're just as athletic as the other nations. They don't have anything to envy. When they play against Mexico for decades historically, you think the Mexicans were all, like, historically and to this day, more athletic than the Americans? No, if anything, it's the exact opposite. The Americans have always been more athletic than the Mexicans. And yet the Mexicans have historically dominated the United States. Not so much since the early 2000s. Okay, it's come up to par. But then compare the United States to Spain. The United States is more on paper and in reality, historically more athletic than Spain. Go one by one. You think Iniesta or Xavi or Busquets is more athletic in what people are thinking of athletic than Jermaine Jones? No chance. You think those guys are more athletic than the defenders that we would always have? No chance. No chance, Benny. Spain is less athletic than us. Okay, so clearly it's not athleticism. That's not the problem.
Yeah, that's a good point, Gary. I'd love to see Jermaine Jones versus Xavi in a 40-yard dash, bro. Xavi gets roasted, bro, but fucking Xavi is levels ahead of what Jermaine Jones ever was. And people don't realize that.
No, you look at Weston McKennie. Weston McKennie is way more athletic than he can go up against anybody in the world. Go against the Spaniards, no problem. Go against the Italians, no problem. From a physical athleticism perspective, does he dominate? Is he the best? No. Marco Verratti can't tie Weston McKennie's shoes athletically. Okay, but Marco Verratti is outrageously better than Weston McKennie. Outrageously. Who's Vitinha on PSG? Portuguese. Vitinha? A clown compared to Weston McKennie athletically. A clown. A joke. Okay? Who's the man, though? Vitinha's the man. But it's not even close.
Yeah.
So stop it with the stupid, ignorant ideas about if our best athlete plays soccer. Stupid.
Oh, man. Wild tangent, Gary, but let's get back to the dark arts and end with it. Obviously, Gary, we've talked about a lot. The U.S. doesn't have this culture here, okay? But for parents listening, and maybe they do come from the typical suburban town and follow the rules, but they do understand the global game. As a parent, how can you get your kid to start having this type of mentality, just winning mentality, Gary? You know, because it's more than likely the coach, if you're coming from that type of town, the coach isn't telling the kids, you know, hey, if it's the last play of the game and we're winning, chop this fool down. I don't care if you get a red card, right? But how do the parents influence that, Gary?
I've been very fiery this episode, and I said a lot of words, right, that might turn a lot of people off. And I'm trying to answer this without being that passionate and that fiery. But it's hard. Nah, dude, it's hard.
We want the passion. We want the fire, bud.
Yeah, it's hard because the answer, in my opinion, is if the parents are these rule-following, soft, weak, put bumpers on all the furniture for their kids, go to the parent-teacher conferences and put the blame on the teacher rather than the student if the student isn't doing great. If you're that kind of parent, you're fucked. The kid's not going to learn these things. Because the parents don't believe in it, Benny. So step one, I suppose, is the parent has to believe that this is a good thing for their kids to be exposed to and be aware of. Do you want the kids to be a cheater or a lawbreaker or something like that? No, but teach them about the real world. And maybe there are things that you don't agree with, but maybe there's some that aren't that harsh. Like wasting time shouldn't be viewed that negatively. I mean, seriously, I don't know. Everybody in one way or another outside of soccer in their own lives do little things like that. I something doesn't come to mind in the moment as an example, but we all kind of do little things like this or that. Have these parents never called in sick when they were not sick? Bet you they have. Have they ever told the coach of their team, oh, we can't make it to the game this weekend, we don't have a ride or the car, what? Lied, straight up lied because they were going on vacation or whatever and they wanted to make an excuse with the coach. A lot of parents have done that. So let's not pretend that you're an angel full of virtue. You know how the real world kind of works and you've acted in this way in your own life. So teach your kid, hey, this is the real world. Maybe waste a little bit of time here if you guys are up 2-1 and you're under the gun. It's not that bad. Maybe walk off instead of running off when you're being substituted to eat up the clock a little bit more. Maybe go down if you feel contact in the box. Is that going to ruin your kid? I don't think so.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, Gary, for your view. Is there a time and place for good sportsmanship, integrity, respect for the opponent, all those types of buzzwords?
Always. You should always be doing that. And let me harmonize that statement with everything we've been saying for an hour. Respecting the game, respecting the opponent, having the integrity of the game at hand is actually executing the dark arts. I think that you do not respect the game. You do not have integrity for the sport itself. If you try to put yourself in an ivory tower and declare yourself virtuous and everybody else is non-virtuous, I think that is a massive disrespect to the sport and to the game. You are being disrespectful. You do not have game integrity because the game is all of these other things. The game is an expression. I forgot who said this. It was the former Liverpool manager, famous quote. I'm going to botch it. Said something to the effect of, people say that soccer is not life or death. And the guy says, you're right. It's a lot more than life and death. That is just a metaphor for expressing it's not just about 11v11, the rectangle, the grass, and the laws of the game. There's all of this other stuff involved. There's social things, there's cultural things, there's economic things, there's political things that are expressed through the sport, through the match, through the game itself. And so one way that this particular culture that I don't agree with does that is by declaring themselves the virtuous ones of the game. We follow the rules. We don't do all of this extracurricular activity. So we are virtuous. So what are they doing? They're expressing their political beliefs. They're expressing their cultural upbringing. They're expressing all of that through the game. And then you've got the other cultures, which we finished describing as to how they grew up, and their cultures down south, South America, Africa, you name it, they have a different view of the world, of the universe. And so that's what they're expressing through the game itself. And for you not to respect that, that means you lack integrity. You don't understand the game.
Yeah.
And for the common view of integrity and sportsmanship, hey, we all shake hands afterwards. It's all good. We're the best of friends outside of the field. Inside of the field, we're sons of bitches.
Yeah. If you can recall one, Gary, do you have a moment that sticks in your mind? Like, fuck, that was incredible gamesmanship. That was the best dark arts I've ever seen. For me, I know I brought it up on the podcast, is when Luis Suarez did the handball in the World Cup. Ghana got the PK. They missed. And these guys ended up moving on. And fucking Suarez was a villain after that, bro. But he won the game for the team, bro. To me, that's like the most perfect example that everything we've been talking about. Fucking savage.
Well, I'll one-up you. That one is like GOAT-level consideration, okay? Mm. The one that I'll stick with is Diego Maradona's Hand of God.
Oh, yeah. Okay?
So
yeah.
Against England, and we have to insert the clip, he goes up to contest it with the goalkeeper, Shilton, and he kind of like uses his hand, right? And like punches the ball over Shilton and scores the goal. You can tell there's zero hesitation from him in his celebration. He just goes off and celebrates. Goal. You know what I mean? But that goes down in the history books. That's why they literally called it the Hand of God. You know, I think they called it that because he kind of coined it like that in the press conference or after. He's like, all I know is that, you know, it was the Hand of God that led to this moment. It wasn't my hand.
And what makes it even better, Gary, is that it could never happen again, bro, because of VAR. It's never going to happen again. Fucking badass moment.
Amazing.
For England fans are like, fuck this.
Of course. But you see the history that's built as a consequence of this action. There's so much richness to it, so much passion that's created as a consequence of that. There's whole Argentine folklore around it. And then for England, the deepest depression, right? Of feeling like you got robbed, and you create this rivalry as a consequence of a moment like that too. And there were all kinds of underlying stories, Benny, because going into that game, you know, earlier Argentina had gone to war with England over the Falkland Islands. They were literally at war. And there is massive antagonism, hatred towards one another. So it was more than just a soccer game, that match. It had all these political ramifications and tensions associated with it. So for the Argentine public, it was justice for what they viewed as being wronged by England over the Falkland Islands. There's all kinds of shit.
That's crazy. I didn't know that, actually. I'm going to have to do some research on that. Is there a point, Gary, when the dark arts can harm your team? Or maybe a player takes it too far and gets a red card when he shouldn't have? Yeah, you lose your head. And another component that we haven't even talked about, which big topic, is fucking shit talking. Like getting in a player's ear. And this is something that the average fan, if you've never played, you would never know it's occurring on the field. But on the field, bro, this Premier League, bro, I guarantee you these guys are telling each other, like, hey, I banged your sister last night, or your mom's a whore. You know what I mean? Like, nonstop getting in the opponent's head. But if you're watching on TV, you would never know that, bro.
Correct. Oh, no, and nowadays, because there's cameras everywhere, all the athletes are covering their mouth when they talk.
Yeah, for sure.
What do you think is going on there?
Yeah, exactly, dude. But, okay, so is there a time, Gary, when the player takes it too far and, like, fucking Zidane, bro. This will headbutt the guy in the World Cup final, red card. You know, I understand where he's coming from, but it's a fucking World Cup final, bro. You know? And credit to the Italian player, forgot in his head. Got the other team a red card and went on to win, bro. So, again, but like you said, the game in the game, bro.
No, but you see, you can't have one without the other. Zidane wouldn't have become Zidane if he didn't have that in him.
Yeah, that's true.
If he wasn't, he's well known historically as a player, as a son of a bitch, like a bad man, a bad, bad man with respect to all this dark arts and shit talk, like everything, bad man. So Zidane doesn't become Zidane, doesn't win a World Cup, doesn't even get to the point where he's battling with Italy, okay, like that, without the dark arts. Hey, did he go too far, potentially with the headbutt? Sure, because they got him kicked out or ejected. And I think that was the last action that he ever had as a footballer, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he retired.
I don't know. I think that might be true. But you didn't even get there without being that type of person.
Yeah, that's true.
The Americans think that, oh, they can get there or we'll get there by being our soft little pussy-ass bitches. My man, unless there's what they say in South America, mano negra, a black hand. No, not literally a black hand, right? That's just an expression for corruption. Unless there's corruption involved where they need the United States or they want the United States to accomplish something amazing in the World Cup, it ain't happening. You can't get there with soft players.
Right. Is having Pochettino as a coach of the U.S., is that enough, Gary, to instill to the players? Or is it just, no, these players have been brought up in this culture. Even if you have Pochettino as a coach, it's like, you're too far gone. You're too much of a pussy.
Good question.
Or do you think he can make that change before the World Cup?
Good question. I think it's in line with our last episode where you brought up Pochettino's Instagram post about culture eats strategy for breakfast. There's so many layers to that saying, and he's Argentine, obviously. That's what he knows he needs to have a chance of being successful. He needs this type of culture. He needs an Argentinian type of culture. Some of those elements in there, some of that nastiness. Klinsmann got smeared because he had actually said in one of his critiques as to what the U.S. men's national team or what U.S. soccer needs to get to the next level, he had literally said, we need to be nastier. And the mainstream here didn't like that at all because they didn't get it. Yes, we need to be nasty. Is Pochettino enough? I mean, at least he gets to pick the players that he thinks maybe have some of that culture in them, and he's going to let them loose. He's going to let the dogs out. So whoever does have that innately in them, he's going to let them do what they need to do. Remember when Tim Weah got a red card? Was it Tim Weah that got a red card stupidly? Well, a couple of players have gotten red cards stupidly maybe a year and a half ago or so.
Serginho Dest, huh?
Yeah, him too. But both of them got red cards. And you know what the mainstream media here and the U.S. men's national team fan base was saying, what their reaction was? Oh, stupid red card. So dumb. So naive. Tim should know better than that. Serginho should know better than to be doing those sorts of things and blasting the ball into the stands after, you know, See, they don't get it, Benny. You have players with some fire in you. Tim Weah is the son of Balon de Oro winner from Liberia, okay? He has it within him. Sergiño Dest, not born in America, raised in America. He's born over there in Holland, where there are sons of bitches in Holland, okay? Arrogant pricks, swagger left and right. He has some of that in him, of course. He has that fire. But here, the mainstream is like, oh, Sergiño, you're better than this. You should be classy. Don't see? They don't get it. But with Pochettino's going to let them loose, dude. Be disciplined. Don't take it too far where you actually, like, you know, hurt the team or something. But more of a longer leash to express themselves.
Yeah. Besides Argentina, Gary, if you're a person out there and you want to look into this more and, like, actually see what we're talking about, who would you say is the best at this, the game within the game? I know you would say Argentina first, no, but
for sure.
Else? Maybe Brazil?
Brazil's pretty good. They're pretty good at it. And if you notice, it's interesting that the Brazilians, historically anyways, have dove in a lot. They've been big divers. But it's kind of interesting to think that the correlation with skillfulness, because they are the most skillful in the world. And so, again, about unbalancing them so that they can't dribble by you, they go down easily. Maybe Brazil. I'm thinking about the other South American nations, and it's just relative to Argentina. They're all naive. Look, the United States is super naive compared to Venezuela and Paraguay and Uruguay, dude, Uruguay. Oh, Uruguay. Okay, they might be number two, Uruguay. The Mexicans are naive as fuck too, dude. Jesus Christ. I'm thinking about overseas now. Holland is up there for sure. The Croatians are kind of, they're wise. They know how to pull some shit too. Italians too. Italians are sons of bitches.
Bro, everybody but the U.S., dude. Right?
Well, the English are bitches, dude. They like following the rules.
Yeah, but they, to an extent, they're better than the U.S. at this game. You know, even Japan, a nation of like respect and dignity, they'll still pull off shit like this, bro. You know, and totally. At the end, they'll fucking clean the locker room, bro. It's like, correct. I'm going to fuck you up in the game, but I'll fucking respect you.
Correct. Correct, man. Correct. Yeah, man.
Crazy.
It'd be interesting if we did some sort of ranking. The top 10. Who we think are the top 10. But I actually think that Argentina takes the cake, bro. I think they have this global reputation of doing this shit over and over again.
Yeah, for sure. And I know when we brought this up before in other podcasts, Gary, you mentioned like, oh, somebody's going to comment. Like, who has won the World Cup and also won the Fair Play Award, right? The stupid Fair Play FIFA Award. And Spain, right? Spain won the World Cup and they also won the Fair Play Award at the same time. But
yeah,
even by winning the Fair Play Award, you know that they were still fucking doing this type of, not like blatantly, you know, launching the ball at the other bench, but there was still fucking this dark arts within the game that just people didn't really see, you know?
The biggest culprit where it was obvious is Sergio Busquets. You've seen that famous figure, and we can put the screenshot of it, where he's on the ground with Spain and he's kind of like peeking to see if like,
if
the referee's looking at him or if he got a yellow card for the other team or not. You know which one I'm talking about? Busquets is probably the biggest son of a bitch in that regard.
Yeah, bro. You look at Sergio Ramos too. I mean, this was fucking dirty, bro, but smart dirty, yeah? Sometimes smart. Other times fucking this two-foot somebody red card, but no, he got away with it. Dude. That guy's a legend,
for,
bro.
For Portugal, Pepe is outrageous.
Yep.
He competes with any Argentinian every day of the week, dude.
Yeah.
I want you to put the clip of him, you know, when somebody falls on the ground and he like scrapes his cleats on the guy's back. We laugh. Look, I'm not going to teach the children to cleat somebody in the back. No. Okay. No, I'm talking about wasting time. Don't go and injure somebody, of course.
Wink, wink. but that's another component of it too, Gary. And it's not even the dark arts. It's just having that physicality and having that mentality to go in and kill, bro. Like the quote that Brian would always say to make a foul, right? He'd fucking say like, end his life, bro. Like, obviously you can't really say that anymore to a kid, but having that mentality to get stuck in, even if it's a clean tackle, bro, doesn't have to be like malicious or bad intent. I feel like that's lacking here in this country too. It's players are soft, bro. They don't get stuck in like you see Pepe, bro. This was made some amazing tackles that look fucking harsh, but it was clean, bro. You know, but over here it's like, oh, this was dirty. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's a big component.
In sport, in competition that is physical, like sport like this, I'm going to say something people are going to object to, like as if they haven't objected 24 times already in this episode. But here we go. Let's make it 24. In sport, human beings, I think we're wired to listen and engage and react a lot more if you're being quote unquote like yelled at in a certain way with certain words that aren't common in everyday living. So you just said, you know, the coach yelling from the sideline, end his life or something like that. That's like, you listen, you're like, holy shit. You know what I mean? Versus yelling something like, do a hard tackle or, you know, something soft language and not yelling, but do everything soft. The human being is just not wired to receive and act, right? We're in large part, we're automatons. Our limbic system just takes over and reacts to certain stimuli. And if you speak to somebody in a very calm, simple voice and try to communicate the same thing versus somebody who's not doing it in a calm, soft voice, but in a strong, powerful, with powerful wordings, the limbic system takes over and you react. So for those who want coaches to sit in the lawn chair or parents just sit in the lawn chair and everything be soft, they're not learning. Their neurons are not firing the way that you want them to fire. Again, I'm reserving this to a specific domain, the domain of competitive sports, because if I'm teaching math in a classroom or if I'm teaching you how to fold laundry or whatever, well, you don't need that. Or if I want to teach you a class on philosophy or have a podcast on philosophy and not competitive sport, well, I'm not going to be dropping pussy this and soft bitch that and fuck you and in a philosophy class, right? Something that's intellectual, more intellectual in nature, because then the opposite happens. You put up a barrier and don't receive the message. But in competitive sport, it's the exact opposite, Benny.
Yeah, I was actually thinking, Gary, I think today, and recalling in my game, like in those moments when your team is in transition from offense to defense and like the other team's on a clear counter, it's like, how can you relate to the player to foul him without saying foul, right? Because you can't yell to the kid like, foul him or fucking chop him down, you know? Like what I usually say is like, end it there or whatever, but I don't think that really translates to them. Whereas like back in the day, if I heard end his life, it's like, okay, I know. I better fucking take this fool down, you know? I was trying to think of a phrase, like, what can I say to where it's like, one, the ref is not going to, like, because also if you say, like, foul him, and even if the kid makes a clean tackle, the ref, he's like, oh, he heard you say foul him. Okay, there's a foul. You know what I mean? Yeah. So how can I translate it to the kid where it's like, fuck, well, one, they should already know, bro. But some of them don't know. If it's you're winning and they're on a break, you're like, fucking chop them down. So I got to think, maybe you know, or somebody in the audience can comment. I don't know what to say. Because again, you can't say end his life. You can't say foul him. You can't say fucking break his leg, you know? I don't know what we could say.
I don't know. Here in the United States, man, you're muzzled. True. I can tell you is that repeating what we said earlier in Argentina, where the kids historically would grow up in Brazil and Paraguay and Colombia and Uruguay playing on the streets. In the streets, they learn to chop the player down if the player is on the breakaway and you know 90% it's going to be a goal or massive danger. They'll just chop you. You'll get chopped. Yeah. They learned this already. So in the game, The coach doesn't even have to say end his life, chop him down, or try to come up with a wording so that the player receives it. The player's getting chopped. You don't have to say anything.
Yeah, that's true. Sadly, that's not the case here, though, dude.
Yeah. You
know? All right, I need somebody in the audience, bro. Tell me your phrase that you say.
Oh, man. Oh, man. I don't think we're going to be getting many recommendations. We're going to be getting a lot of hate mail for this one, Benny.
That's okay.
You guys are a menace to the game. You guys should never be in charge of kids and coaching. So, bro, you don't get it. You don't get it. I literally just had an office hour with a couple of students after class today. And let's keep this in because it's kind of related from a cultural perspective. No, these are college students, Benny, in technical fields to add, which is higher standards than non-technical fields. College students now, they don't read. They just don't read. And I had a candid conversation with them, very open, transparent. They were open and transparent with me. I'm not your typical professor where Giselle wears a suit and tie and tries to act like I'm a big time guy. Nah, going like this with a freaking pair of jeans and some Chucks, you know, and I talk to them just like I'm talking to you right now. Totally informal. So they open up to me and I open up to them. I'm like, hey, tell me why you guys don't read the book. It was just a few students in my office. And why other students don't. Yeah, it's like, Gary, like in high school, nobody reads books. Well, doesn't your teacher in high school or in elementary school like tell you, okay, read this chapter and do it? No, they don't. They don't. So what's like, how do you learn or how do you pass classes and stuff? Oh, well, it's not that hard, to be honest. They tell us like everybody passes. You barely have to do anything. And secondly, it's they just, you know, do PowerPoint presentations and they give us PowerPoint slides. And we just kind of memorize whatever's on the PowerPoint slides. And the tests aren't that hard. They're basically literally what's on the PowerPoint slides. So we just repeat what's on the PowerPoint slides. And that's no deep learning. Everything's on the surface, Benny. So they come to me or they come to college with that sort of programming. They can barely read and write, Ben. They learn nothing. Nobody cracks open a book anymore. You know, oh, Gary, you're old fashioned or something. No, my friend, you show me a proven methodology outside of the outrageously incredible invention that humans came up with, which was a book to capture a pristine block of thought, a block of knowledge, you know, with maximum signal and minimum noise. That is what a book captures, Benny. Show me a medium or a way of learning that is superior to that. I dare anybody. It doesn't exist because you can listen to podcasts or reels, you know, on Instagram or short media content via audio or video. You aren't absorbing anything and you actually aren't practicing anything. You have superficial knowledge. You don't have deep subject matter expertise. You can't acquire deep subject matter expertise like that. It's the same in soccer, Ben. They want us to all like, oh, let the kids play. Everybody's equal. It's all good. The game is the best teacher. It's the same shit. And you produce shocking players and shocking coaches, by the way.
Yeah, man. What are you gonna title this episode, Gareth? How to cheat at soccer?
That's not bad. That's not bad. Or cheating. Cheating in soccer is good.
Oh, man. I can't wait for the comments on this one.
Or if you don't think that cheating in soccer is good, you're a pussy.
Good luck with that one.
I'm not scared. I'm good.
Legend, bro. All right, dude. I hope one coach or parent finds value in this. That's my only hope. And I know there'll be more, but if we can get across to one person that maybe hadn't thought about this or wasn't even aware that this existed in the game, I think we've done our job.
And you know how I know that they will gain value from this, even if they're closed off? Unless they're so closed off, they utterly reject it, okay? We are the only outlet, in my opinion, that is telling you the unvarnished truth. Because honestly speaking, coaches out there that aren't brainwashed by the MLS monopoly, they all believe what I just said. They all know what I said is true. They know it. Think of your homies, Prieto, Choco, all these guys, or some of these guys who have been coaches, Danny Rogers. They know what I'm saying is true. They fucking know. All these guys, MLS coaches even, or you talk to Tata Martino or Bielsa, they know what I'm saying is true. So we're offering folks an insight that you will not get from them. They're compromised. They can't tell you this stuff and certainly not drop pussy this and bitch that. You're welcome.
I love it, dude. You got to make that the teaser for the episode, bro. That's great.
So parents, you should be like, fuck, like this is how these people really think. That's a huge gold nugget, because I'll tell you what, like face to face, the coaches will never confess to you this, even if it's one-on-one with you. They're going to tell you what you want to hear about your little Johnny. And they're going to say in a very professional, diplomatic way, because you're paying the club money and the club employs the coach. So they're going to be treat you how you want to be treated. You want to be treated like Charmin Ultra Soft 2-ply toilet paper. They'll wipe your ass with it smoothly. They'll even buy you a fucking, a bidet. Go here, I'll rinse your ass for you, okay? Because I know that's what you want. They're not going to come with a sandpaper to wipe your ass. I don't care. I'll bring the sandpaper.
Fuck. Poor Johnny, dude. Poor Johnny. you know fucking Johnny won the award on his team for honor and integrity. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. Poor Johnny. One day in our podcast, maybe by episode number 500, Johnny has now graduated to being in the middle of the roster. And somebody else will be the bad guy on the roster.
There you go. I thought you were going to say he's fucking Johnny went pro, bro.
No, Johnny's never going pro, man.
Yeah, it's too late, huh?
It's over.
Mm-hmm. But you know fucking Jose is doing the dark arts every game, bro. Jose's, and that's what makes him special.
Yeah, Jose's got a chance. Felipe has got a chance. Mauricio has a chance. Lionel has a chance. Rodrigo has a chance. Angel has a chance. Ooh, people are getting fucking triggered right now.
Here come the racist comments, Gary.
No, here in the United States, it's actually the opposite. You know who has the chances here? Zach has a chance. Jack, John. Those are the guys that actually have a chance here in the States. Because here in the States, we don't like Felipe or Lionel or Rodrigo or Angel. Nah, we don't like those fools. They can kick rocks. We're promoting Jack.
Fucking Jack, Lucas. Fucking, there's so many, dude.
Absolutely.
Love it, bro. Somebody's also going to comment about your, what is that analogy? I've never heard that. The black hand, la mano negra. Oh, is that what you said?
Yeah, mano negra. That's what they say in South America when there's corruption, where it's like an invisible hand, a dirty hand. That's what it's supposed to signify. It's a dirty hand. There's something dirty happening.
Does that stem from racism or no?
I don't think that stems from racism. No, I don't think so. Yeah. I might be wrong. We're going to have to ask to see ChatGPT or now Grokopedia. I don't know if you're aware that Elon launched the competitor to Wikipedia. Good riddance to Wikipedia. That place has been infested with nonsense. Yeah, we'll do some research to see if it has racist origins. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised either.
Yeah. All right, dude. Good stuff. This has been one of my favorite episodes for sure.
Okay. Let's see how it comes out in the edits, man. I'm not shy. We're publishing the whole thing.
Yeah. Fucking hold nothing back, dude. Love it.
All right, brother. Thank you very much. And yes, until next time.
All right. Later, Gary.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass
for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.